This is PhotoBizX, episode number 310. And today we're talking boudoir photography with a Canadian-based photographer who struggled to find her feet in the beginning and tried various genres of photography until she found her calling, which was boudoir photography. Since then, business has absolutely taken off and she is flying. I'm talking about Alishpa Zhar, and that interview is coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. This is the first time I've recorded and released a two-part episode, and you will hear exactly why once we get into the interview today. I'm not going to give too much away, but what I will tell you is Alishpa is an amazing woman with an incredible story and a fantastic business. We didn't really get time to dive right into the tactics and strategies in today's interview. So with time running out, I suggested that we record a second interview. So that's going to be part two, which is coming up next week. But I can assure you, you want to hear the full interview today because you will be blown away by Alishpa, her story and her business and what she has to share today. So that's coming up shortly. And be warned, there is talk of sex toys, threesomes, cheating partners, you name it, this interview with Alishpa has got it. Plus feminism, women's rights, terrorism, death threats, and so much more. And there's photography as well. So like I said, this interview really does have it all. So what I am doing in regards to the premium and free versions of the interview is everyone will hear the full interview today. So whether or not you're a free podcast listener or a premium member, you'll hear the full interview for today. And next week, when we dive deep into the tactics and the strategies that Alishpa is using to build her business, I will be saving a large portion of that interview for premium members only. As far as me and my week is concerned, I have just spent the last week in the Victorian Alps, which are our version of the Alps here in Australia. It does snow there in winter, but it's basically, well, they are basically big hills, small mountains maybe, I guess you could call them. And I've been down there on a junior cycling camp with around 20 elite junior cyclists. And for me, look, it's just a getaway with a good mate of mine who has a son, another junior cyclist, and we basically join in. I was going to say chaperone the kids, but half the time they beat us up the hills anyway. These kids are absolutely fantastic athletes. So we spend a week with them. And what I've done in the last 2 years that I've been on this trip is taken one day off to take photos of the kids and put together a slideshow. And it reminded me, well, this week it reminded me of a conversation that we'd been having inside the members' Facebook group and one that you might have had with other photographers in your circles about iPhones and consumer cameras taking off and making photography so accessible to everyone else. And it being an issue, a concern for professional photographers looking to make a living from photography like you are. And you would have heard all kinds of arguments about how good phones and cameras are getting these days and how little value people are placing on photography. But then on the other hand, you hear the exact opposite, you know, from successful photographers. Interestingly enough, with the kids that I was riding with this week, most of them are aged between 15 and 20, maybe 22. They were all super excited about which day I would be having off the bike to take photos of the kids out on their bikes. They wanted me to put together this slideshow that I've done in the last 2 years, and they were looking forward to being photographed by a professional photographer as much as doing the riding itself down there, which was an eye-opener for me. I mean, I know, yes, everyone enjoys seeing photos of themselves, but these kids, they are the generation that have access to phones and cameras and are taking selfies and are all spending so much of their time on social media. It was interesting to hear from them that they were so keen to be photographed and to have great photos of themselves doing what they love to do. So yeah, I did take a day off the bike and I did spend the day with Phil, my good mate. We followed the kids in the car and sort of spent time in front of them, behind them, leapfrogging, taking photos so that I could put together this slideshow. So I'm yet to do that. But as is with any client, the first thing the kids asked as soon as we got back after the day of riding and me photographing was, you know, when can we get the photos, Andrew? When will they be ready? When can we see the slideshow? I was hearing that not only from the kids, but from the parents of some of the kids as well. So nothing changes. Even if it's a free shoot, people want their photos right away. And there was something else that I was concerned about in regard to taking photos of kids cycling, and that is, and you might have experienced this yourself, is that people tend to take unnecessary risks when the camera comes out. You know, I know that when we're skiing, you know, with my friends, with my kids as well, as soon as the camera comes out, you know, we say they get their camera legs on and they start doing bigger jumps or trying things they wouldn't normally attempt because the camera is out and it's being recorded. And this was my biggest fear with the kids. So on the last descent of the day, it was a big descent. It's about a 10-kilometer downhill run back to town, back to the town of Bright, where we were staying. And it's fast. It's very, very twisty. And we'll be hitting speeds of, you know, 60, 70, maybe up to 80 kilometers an hour. And I said to the coach, Coach Mick, look, I'm going to shoot off ahead with Phil and set up on a corner, but don't tell the kids that I'm down there photographing because I don't want them to be taking any unnecessary risks. So we shot off, and as far as the kids knew, we were heading home and we were done for the day. But Phil and I, we found a nice hairpin bend, which I thought would be great for some good photography. And I set up there, pre-focused my camera. I'm certainly not a sports photographer by any sense of the imagination. I was there with a Fuji X-Pro 2. I had fixed focal length lenses. I picked a lens that I thought would be great for this particular corner and selected my exposure, pre-focused, and was ready to shoot away. Anyway, the first couple of kids came into sight, and I don't know if it was bad luck or, you know, possibly even good luck when you hear the rest of the story, or if it had anything to do with me even being on that corner. But the first two kids that came into the corner, one tried to undertake the other. He put the second rider off, which was a young 20-year-old girl, and she lost control of her bike. And, you know, it was horrific. It was frightening, scary. I took my camera away from my eye. Once I got a couple of shots, I heard her scream. And next thing, she was out of control and her front wheel went into a ditch and she was basically thrown, cartwheeled off over the handlebars into a rocky / dirt wall on the side of the road. And it was absolutely frightening, sickening to hear. And the other kids, they couldn't stop. They were on the line. They kept flying past. Some saw it. Some heard her screaming. And some heard her, you know, groaning and screaming once she'd actually hit the ground and was laying there in this ditch. And I have a photo of this of the ditch and where she was laying with the ambulance, the paramedics there, in the show notes for today's episode. I've got that at the very bottom of the show notes, not to take anything away from Alishma's beautiful work, but I wanted to share this with you. We called for an ambulance. There was no service whatsoever, no service. So, and amazingly, I mean, not amazingly, it was nice to see other car drivers pulling over to see if we need assistance. We had no help. One offered to race to the top of the hill and call an ambulance. Phil, my mate, he ran down to Emily to do what he could for her, and she was still screaming by the time he got there. Her neck was sore. Her back was hurting. She had a sore shoulder. She's laying in a ditch, and he couldn't move her. It was as bad as it gets. It took 25 minutes for the paramedics to arrive, and they gave her some drugs for pain management and then had to go about working out how to get her out of that ditch without causing any more damage, which took another 35 to 40 minutes. So, yeah, it was a horrific experience. And Phil and I were talking about it afterwards, and, you know, we were saying, was it because we were taking photos on the corner? Was it because the kids were taking unnecessary risks? Did the camera and me being there have anything to do with that accident happening, with that incident happening? We don't really know the answer. Phil suggested that, look, it was just the kids going in too fast into that corner. They couldn't have known that we were going to be in that spot at that time. But it's it's something that certainly weighed heavily on my mind. The good news is that Emily is okay. She had a really bad cut in her on her face and her lip, and she had to have plastic surgery done on that over the weekend. She was airlifted to hospital from the small country hospital to a Melbourne hospital. But by all reports, she's making a great recovery. She has a broken collarbone, plenty of cuts and bruises. And yeah, it wasn't good being there and feeling somewhat responsible purely because I had a camera in my hand. So I don't know if you've ever experienced anything like that when photographing kids or sports or anything of that kind of nature. It certainly doesn't seem to happen at weddings or portrait sessions with me. Yes, I can actually say that I know that some parents take unnecessary risks with their kids when I'm photographing kids' portraits, particularly around the rocks and the beach. And I always am adamant to the parents, look, do not let your kid or your child fall. I can get another photo and any time. I'm happy to photograph them up on this rock ledge or wherever we might be, but their safety is paramount. So please step in. I cannot get to them in time with this lens that I'm shooting with. You know, it might be an 80 or a 135 mil lens. I can't get there quick enough. So you stand close, but stop them no matter how good the photo looks, if it looks like they're going to fall. I'm guessing you've probably experienced things like that. I don't know if you've ever had someone have an accident on a particular shoot, whether it's family or a paid shoot. But yeah, if you have, share your experiences with me in the comments area, today's show notes, or if you're a premium member, let's have a chat about it inside the members Facebook group. Yeah, what was a fantastic week away had that black spot, that black mark because of poor Emily. And yeah, I'm just thankful that she's going to be okay. All right, let's get on with the rest of this episode.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
Last week's episode featured Mervyn Reid Nelson. He is a boudoir photographer based in the UK, and it was a members-only episode. Mervyn is a premium member, has been for a long time, and we dived into detail about the mastermind group that he's a part of. We basically dissected how his mastermind group sessions work, how he got started in a mastermind group, how his group has morphed over the last couple of years, where some members have left, other new members have come in, how they set their guidelines, and more importantly, I guess, and most importantly, how that mastermind group has affected Mervyn's photography business. So if you want to hear more about mastermind groups, setting up your own, getting involved in mastermind group, it's one of the best things you could ever do for your business. And Mervyn is testament to that, going by what he shared in last week's episode. We also dived into the boudoir side of his business and a strategy that he's employing to have better connection than ever before when he runs a Facebook ad with potential clients. So this is ads running to a cold audience, how he's establishing rapport and likability almost immediately with anyone that likes or comments on his Facebook post, which is an ad. So all that in last week's episode. It's a premium members only episode. Get back and have a listen to that one if you are a premium member. And if you are at all considering joining or forming or becoming part of a mastermind group, it is an absolute must listen.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Alrighty, we're going to jump into this interview with Alishba Zah in just a second. Just a quick heads up, I normally have a little bit of a chit chat with my guests before we actually start recording or before I introduce them to you. And it's an easy way for me to let them know how the whole interview process works, make sure they have a glass of water. We can do a sound check. We do all those sorts of things. Then I normally introduce them, and that's where the interview starts. In this case today with Alishba, we were off and running from the minute she answered the call, and that's where we're going to start the interview today. You will hear an introduction, but I don't think it's for about 10 or 15 minutes into the interview. So, just a heads up of what's happening when we get into this right now.
Oh, getting there. I was just like talking to somebody right now, so I'm like, hey, don't introduce me as an amazing boudoir photographer yet, because, I'm just like, I want to be... I'm still not comfortable with the success. It sounds so bad.
Why not? I can't believe that.
No, it's just because like there's like, you know, little bit of this thing like, oh shit, like, you know, 6 months of success, so awesome. But what if next month goes completely blank and I have no bookings? Right? It's just that thing at the back of my mind. My goal is like, if I can make it to 1 year mark, I can make it to a 10 year mark.
For sure. So, but it sounds like you're going great.
Yes, yes. It's good. It's good. It's like I'm confident. I'm confident. That's how I would phrase it.
Good, good.
Yeah, super excited.
I know. Well, you have a good idea of how the interviews go. I'll let you know that what I usually do is read an introduction and then we'll be off and running after that.
Yes, yes, yes. That's
fantastic.
Fine. Yes.
Do you have a glass of water or something stronger handy?
No, I'm good because I do a lot of podcasts and interviews not related to photography. I do a lot of secular activism. So I'm very comfortable with this.
Good. So, hang on. What do you do? Yeah. Secular what?
Secular activism. So basically, a lot of people don't know this because I keep my two Facebook profiles kind of like away from each other, because my most active Facebook profile and Twitter account, where I've got like hundreds of thousands of followers, is my activist profiles, because I was born and raised in Pakistan and I'm an atheist and a feminist, which is like, I'm going to kill you. So the whole country wants to kill me. So I basically have like death threats from terrorist organizations like Taliban and ISIS for doing the feminist work and the secular activism work that, you know, okay, religion and politics will eventually lead you and the world to death. So let's not do that. So for that reason, like, so I can't go back to Pakistan, but however, I have a lot of following with the people who do, you know, like people like Richard Dawkins. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I've heard that name, yes.
Yeah, so these people are like in my circle. So
wow.
Yeah, so a lot of work with them, a lot of work with different organizations like that. And I do a lot of public speaking, which is about these topics. So I'm very, very politically involved. So photography is kind of like, that's why I'm a boudoir photographer. That's actually one of the reasons I wanted to do boudoir only, because it ties in completely with my philosophy overall. And I think people see that. That's why the women who are coming to me, they don't book me because they're like, oh, your advertising is great, your website is great, let's book you in. My booking rate is like, between the time they email me and they've paid me $400 session fee is 7 minutes. my booking rate is 20%. So out of every 10 inquiries I get, I book two. Right. So the reason is all of this stuff and where I'm coming from. And so that they forget about pricing by the end of the conversation, even though I mentioned pricing at the end. You know, I do a lot of these interviews, podcasts and stuff, talking shit about religion and how it is like, you know, screwed women over. So so like if you Google my name, those will be the first things that'll come up, like my actual Elizabeth Zermeen, my actual name. Those things are the things that'll come up before any photography thing will ever show up.
Right. Okay. So does that mean most of the women that you're photographing have a tie to religion or have a Pakistani or an Asian background?
I wouldn't say most, but some do. And I have photographed hijabi women for boudoir.
Wow.
Yeah. So they come to me and women who do stumble across my political stuff, they find it so endearing that they want to book me because they want to talk to me. So coming to me for, yeah, like, you know, I've had these women tell me that the reason I booked the session, like your photos are great and everything, but I thought it would be so cool to meet you.
Wow. Okay. But how do the women know that if they find you through the religious social media profiles or the activist
profiles? If you Google my name, Elizabeth Zermeen full, those are the photos, because when they're thinking like, they're like, oh, like, you know, I'm just going to Google this person, and they expect to see photos, but that's not the first thing that shows up. So when they read those things, when they see my articles or my podcasts or the other interviews that I've done, and they hear me speak, or they read my, they land on my Facebook page, my other Facebook page, or my Twitter and stuff, and they read everything that I'm talking about, then they connect it to me. And then sometimes they even ask me, is this you? I'm like, yeah, it's because I don't want to turn off people, because I'm very, very unabashed and upfront. And a lot of people wouldn't consider that I'm a very nice person in a private conversation, because my friends call me the Trump of Democrats, the liberal Trump. So that's basically how I would talk.
Oh my God.
Because I would be like, I would say things like, you know, for example, there was this thing. So in the UK, a bunch of second generation Pakistani parents, Muslim parents, are protesting that their kids are being taught LGBTQ integration lessons in school, like basically diversity and inclusion. So they have a problem with that because they're like, oh, this is stealing children's innocence away. Yeah, like, you know, basically telling kids to not bully each other is being like, you know, basically this is Pakistani Muslim mentality. So I went and wrote a post about it, that how to be an idiot and march against yourself, basically. Also telling little girls that their hair is too sexy and responsible for rape is apparently not exploiting innocence. Or the fact that their prophet married a 9-year-old is not exploiting innocence. They tried to pull this shit in Ontario as well, along with some conservative Christians. Didn't work at the time. I hope UK also doesn't bend backwards to accommodate this nonsense. So this was in reference to the sex ed curriculum that my province had pushed out, and then Muslim and Christian conservative parents marched against it. And it was stupid, but the government was like, well, you can march all you want. Our responsibility is to protect the kids, so we are going to do this curriculum whether you like it or not. So I'm like very unabashed, and I would use things like, I would compare hijab to Confederate flag because that's what it is. I'm like, I'm not going to go attack somebody who's wearing a hijab, but I can have a comment about the hijab, the thing itself. So I would say things like that, and I have absolutely no regrets for saying things like that, because it's all the truth, because I've come from that background. I come from that country where, you know, if your bra strap is showing, it's like, oh my God, like you will get harassed and raped.
Wow.
So that is the main reason why my best work is my boudoir work, because my goal in life is to encourage women to take their clothes off, and for men to be like, if this is happening, don't rape. So it kind of goes with my broader philosophy to make sure that we get rid of modesty culture, because that's rape culture. And like, for that reason, one of my biggest spenders, like this one client, she spent $6,000 on her package with me, and I'm doing a Santorini trip now. I put out this thing that I'm going to do a destination photo shoot in Greece. She was the first person to sign up. She hasn't received her photos yet. She just completed a $6,000 payment plan, and she dropped another $5,000, excluding tickets, to go to Santorini.
Wow. What, to be photographed by you?
So she was Mormon and has 6 kids, then divorced her Mormon husband, went and got a boob job, came to me for a photo shoot, and now she wants to go to Greece to do a photo shoot with me.
I love it. I love it.
So this is like, you know, and a lot of the times, a lot of mentors and people would say, oh, don't talk about your political beliefs, don't do this and don't do that. What it has done for me is only bring me more money and the best clients, and my biggest spenders, like $10,000, $12,000 coming from one client. And this is just one of those 3 clients in the last 6 months alone I've had. So the last 6 months alone, 3 of my clients have been my repeat clients already, and already invested over $10,000 with me on their experiences.
Fantastic. Okay, so those 3 best clients, did they find you via your religious post, or did they Google you because they were interested in boudoir photography, found the religious stuff, and then booked you?
So they come from everywhere. So what I did was, I didn't do like a one-track approach when I started this, right? So I kind of went all out. So I did my own SEO to the point that I'm ranking number 1 for multiple keywords in Toronto for boudoir, pinup, women's photography, like all, like I basically throughout all competition within 6 weeks, and my website was like, my domain was like 2 weeks old, and these websites were running for years. So that's one approach I did. Second approach I did was ads, retargeting, interest building with blogs. I did that. I did my I revamped the whole system. I book them when I do consultations. I don't communicate with them over email other than telling them, hey, when's the best time to talk? Oh, you know, I was just looking for pricing. Great. When's the best time to talk? I don't feel comfortable giving out my phone number. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I don't book any clients without a pre-consultation because it's important for me to know where you're coming from and to see if we are even a good fit. Oh, okay. Here's my phone number. So this is literally the extent of my email conversation. They go in my pipeline. And they get like, you know, my email sequence, which is like 6 months long. So until they unsubscribe, at least once a week, they'll get an email from me that is in addition to any newsletter or anything that I send out manually. The point of each email in that sequence is for them to schedule a consult with me. So I will contact them in all ways possible. Like I don't have anything like on my Instagram, no DM, email only, or on my Facebook, no PM. Email only is bullshit because I want them to have as many ways to communicate with me as possible. So they can PM me, they can DM me, they can call me, whatever they do. The point is to get their phone number and email. And I call them right away and I book them right away too. So my booking chances are like 70% higher if I contact them through phone and stuff like and things like that and not wait. And that's one of the biggest things that has been a game changer. I don't send them a price list. I don't do any of that. All of that consultation has to be over the phone, or some of them insist on meeting in person, and I'm fine with that. They can come over too, but a phone consultation is 100% essential for us to move forward anywhere. And if they're not willing to get on the phone, they're not my client anyway. So I'm like, I don't waste time on that then.
Yeah. Elizabeth, this is all amazing. I don't think I've ever been 15 minutes into an interview or a talk where I haven't introduced the guest. So can we leave everything in?
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot. I'm just rambling. I'm so sorry. Okay, go.
No, no. Well, let me introduce you to the listener because and I just want to keep going, but okay. Let me do a proper introduction because I want them to know, I want the listener to know more about you.
Yes.
So let me introduce you. Here I go. In October 2018, I received this PM from Elishpa. She said, hey, Andrew, Anita Watkins' post prompted me to thank you as well for being such a real guide. I made some changes in my business model in September, and I'm super happy to report that by December, I will have made $40,000 at the bare minimum, and it keeps multiplying. I'm finally able to love my work and not feel like crying because I can't monetize with something I love to create. So again, thank you. So I immediately wrote back to Elishpa and I said, congratulations, let's do an interview. And she came back to me and said, look, I want to give this a few more months in order to report consistently making $10,000 to $20,000. And she laughed about that. So in January, a couple of months ago, 2019, I received another PM from Elishpa and she says, hey, Andrew, happy new year. I'm in happy tears as I write this. My business is 100% sustainable. It has crossed the threshold that I set to measure success. My projected gross revenue for this year is $250,000. As you've heard, it's just going from success to success. But it also, if you've been listening, and I'm sure you have, it's no surprise that she is the success she is. Because look how hard she's working. She is amazing. Elishpa, let's keep going.
Yes, I know. Oh my gosh. No, this is like quite an emotional thing. Like when I wrote to you, you were one of the first people I wrote to when this happened, because every time I used to hear the podcast and everything, I'm like, how the hell are these people doing all of this stuff? And one thing that's stuck out to me after, like only reflecting back, you know, after the success is that the bridge between listening to what needs to be done and doing what needs to be done, that bridge, I finally crossed that bridge. That's what happened. And I flushed out all the mentor stuff that I had ever heard from anybody I admired. I stopped following all the mentors. That was one of the first thing I did. Like, you know, Sue Bryce was the first person who introduced the concept of IPS, right? And it was great. And I've known this for 5 years. And anytime I implemented, my sales were like close to $3,000. I just never did it consistently enough. And I was feeling like, you know, like it's such a tool because I was like, I know this works, but I was just not doing it all the time. But the thing was that there was so much of, in the mentoring business, there's so much of like, this method is the method that works for everybody and it should work for you too. And then these mentors, they create their own style and they want everybody to follow that particular style because they're like, this is the style that's going to sell. This is the product that's going to sell. Follow it to the T. This is the kind of studio you need and all of that stuff. So I shut down all of that. And I went back to the basics. I was like, okay, what do I like creating? How do I like creating? Why do I like creating that? So the first thing that was to go from my business was weddings. Completely cut that off. Do not advertise it. I have so much wedding portfolio. It's all sitting in a backup drive that's just collecting dust because I don't want to ever look at it again. I don't ever want to use those images again because I hate the idea of marriage in general. So no wonder. It was like, I was good at wedding photography because at least the portrait part of it. But every single time I had a wedding, I would be miserable, you know, processing it, dealing with wedding clients. And to the point that, you know, when I got married, we didn't have a wedding. We just went to courthouse and we got married because, you know, our parents are a little bit traditional in that way that my mom would like completely flip out. So I was like, okay, we just need a document signed. And that's what we did and took the family out to dinner. Cause I was like, I'm not about to do like floral arrangements and like whether I should wear pink or blue. Like, I'm not going to get into that. I don't have time for that. I have no interest in it. I am a control freak. So I hated that wedding and event photography is heavily reliant on what the hell is going on in the moment. I want to design a certain set. I want to have control over light. I don't want to be dealing with like 2000 ISO because the low light is so bad because they wanted to create an ambiance, but it also wanted me to create great wedding photos with giving me like, you know, the lightest spotlight they could find because they want everything to be romantic and still captured like, you know, Jay-Z's wedding. I'm like, you can't have it both ways. So I was like, I'm not going to deal with it. I hate grainy images. So I'm not going to deal with it. Documentary photography, if I'm in a war zone, sure. But if I'm at a wedding, no, I don't want to do wedding documentary photography. Being a South Asian woman, I was attracting South Asian clients, right, left, and center, who want, you know, I'm not a self-hating South Asian, but a lot of my people want the best thing for the bare minimum. So like I was, they wanted 3 days full wedding coverage for less than $4,000. And I did that like an idiot, like a total idiot. I did that. And like, I love, love, love my brides and all of these people that I work with. Like some of them have become like really good friends of mine, but I did not enjoy the wedding photography process. They were always budgeted oriented. They were always like, they're the ones in control. And they wanted like candid and all this stuff. But where my strength lies is like posing, making them feel the best and beautiful and them not being stressed. And I have never met a couple that is not stressed on their wedding day. So wedding was the first thing to go. Second thing to go was newborn photography. The only newborn I've ever photographed was my daughter. And at that moment, I decided I'm never doing this for anybody else. So weddings and newborns were the first thing to go. I'm like, I'm not even going to go near any child who is under 3 years of age. After that, I can light them, pose them, direct them, and that's fine. Once I got comfortable with that, then I was like, okay, do I want to get into family photography? Do I want 5 to 6 people in my studio 3 times a day and mom getting hair and makeup done and ready, getting ready, dad dealing with kids. Do I want that chaos? Sometimes I can deal with it. Okay, so I'm going to do family photography by referral only. So stopped advertising that. It's still on my main website, but I stopped advertising that. Then came naked women. And I was like, yes, I want to do that. Because even before, my most beautiful work is the work that is the female form. And the fact that the philosophy behind it, women are like, you know, with the whole Me Too campaign, that's actually one of the biggest reasons of my success too, because I internalized the whole thing. I spoke about all of the harassment and abuse that I have went through, as most women. When the Me Too thing came out, it was actually the first time I went into graphic details about my own experience with rape and things like that. So when I did that, it just pushed me more that I just need to do boudoir. I'm not going to call it women's portraits. I'm not going to call it contemporary portrait. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be like beautiful, conservative, you know, long dresses so everybody feels good. Old women feel good. I'm like, no, I am going to tell old women that even if you do take your clothes off, you are still going to look ridiculously hot. And let me tell you this, I am very proud to say that in the last 3 months, I've shot two grandmas.
Wow.
In lingerie, right?
Fantastic.
It's great. And one of them is, again, going to Santorini with me.
Oh, so she's...
No, that's another one. That's another one, right? So, like, I opened 8 spots, and 3 of those 8 spots are my past clients. So that's another lady who's going with me. So when I started doing this, I saw that I have tapped into something that is much, much bigger than boudoir, much, much bigger than photography. It is about something that I connect with. When I talk to these women, about 40% of women start crying on the phone when I speak to them for various reasons. The biggest reason being what they have been through in life. And I think that's also one of my strengths there, because from the moment I say hello, they feel so comfortable for some reason that they start telling me their entire life stories. Like, for example, this woman I photographed on Valentine's Day, she's turned out to be a prosecutor for the city. And when I spoke to her a few weeks before the shoot, when with the pre-consultation, she started breaking down and she was just like, I just had a really, really bad breakup, horrible breakup, and I need to feel sexy and I need to do this for me. And she booked the session with me right then and there. Then when she came over, throughout the session, she was loving it, all of that stuff. She saw the photos. And at the end of her whole process, I was like, hey, do you mind giving me like a little video testimonial of like how your experience was? And as I was recording her, she started crying that how taken care of she felt by me, my makeup artist, in the studio, which is, by the way, in my living room. And then like, almost all of my testimonials are women crying happy tears. Like almost everybody who agrees to do this, they're like crying at the end of the experience. And this is like after spending thousands of dollars. I don't know if they're crying because they spent thousands of dollars. And they're crying. But in their own words, they just love the experience. They have never seen photos that beautiful of themselves. And I do same day reveal. This is before Photoshop. This is before the final product. This is straight out of the camera photos they're seeing, and they're just like bawling, right? So there is like something more to this. It's like the photo shoot is something that they get to keep as a memory and as a reminder of what they felt in the moment. Of course, the photos, like the quality and the beauty of the photos is 100% important, because that is going to reflect on their self-esteem. So I have to make sure that I'm photographing them in the best possible way they want to be photographed. But there is something else going on here. There's something else going on, which is somebody who understands what empowerment means, somebody who is willing to listen, somebody is willing to appreciate, somebody is willing to be non-judgmental. Like almost every single time my girls who come to me, like they're very open. By the end of the session, they'll tell me like, you know, how they are in relationships, which lets them have threesomes with their husbands, right? Or how they are in a really horrible relationship and they want to do this photo shoot because they want to send the photos to an ex who just got in touch with them.
Wow.
Right? Like, you should, like, I could write a book.
You should. You should be.
I don't know how many photographers can connect with clients to the level that they're telling me things they would tell their therapist, right? But I think that is the reason why my average is high, because when I'm connecting with them, it's not about what sale I'm going to make, right? Because if I'm genuinely interacting with them and talking to them, and this doesn't mean that I have to agree with them all the time too. They all know, like, you know, my views and everything. So they don't have to agree with me, but being comfortable to the point where you feel like you are not judged for anything. Women who have never gone lingerie shopping, at the end of the session, they're like, can I do a topless shoot? Right? Like, to get them to that level, there is like a whole process that starts from the first time they look at your work and your website and send you that inquiry. That's where it starts. Like, you can't expect to be like, hey, this is my price list, buy. You can't expect to build a relationship. Now, every single time, even people who don't book me, if they look at somebody else, if they're price shopping, whatever, they're doing comparisons, I will be the person that'll come to their mind, because I would be the only person they would have actually.
Because you insist that they have to get on the phone.
Yeah. And I keep talking to them. I keep in touch with them. They see my voice in my blogs too. My blogs are not like, oh, today Miss A was in the studio. Her session was so beautiful. We used pink lingerie from Victoria's Secret. Oh, so thank you so much for coming to my studio. Bye. I don't write bullshit blogs like that. Like, I don't write session blogs. I just wrote a blog yesterday. It was called Confessions of a Boudoir Photographer. And what women really want. That was the topic of the blog. And I just put some of the stories, like some of the stories that I told you, but some other ones, I put those stories in a blog format and wrote it down so that people can hear my voice and what's going on. And I talked about every single, you know, like, women are interested in learning, you know, talking about sex toys. Women are interested in talking about contraception. They are interested in talking about, you know, oh, like, what is the life of an escort, right? Things like that. They are interested. It's a curious thing. It's taboo. They feel like they can't talk those things with anybody. So when in my private VIP group, like, one of my most popular conversation was, I do this Monday confessions thing in my group, and I put in there, sex toys, yay or nay, what does it for you? And that thread went on to, like, I don't know, like 35 comments or something. And these women have never interacted with each other for the most part. And they're like talking about everything, right? Like, what brands to go for, what sizes to go for, what speeds to go for. Like, it was educational for me too. So, like, they want to know. And then, because in Canada, sex work is legal, as it should be, because it protects women. So I do shoot some escorts as well for their websites. So I would talk about that as well, that, you know, the mystery of the escort industry is not as mysterious, actually. But because a lot of people, a lot of women are not, they don't even know other women who would know a sex worker or would have any interactions in the burlesque community or in webcam strippers or things like that. But because I interact with them and then I can anonymously talk about different stories and things like that, it builds their trust. And they're like, oh, so this girl really knows what she's doing. And I like how she's explaining things. So even if they read, like, think of it this way. Why Cosmopolitan is the shittiest magazine, but still the most sold magazine, right? Like, and they provide no content. So if I do that, but provide content and add my own opinions and voice to it, increases readership so much. My blogs get shared from my ads just for the content. right? So like, I am my own BuzzFeed. I don't need a BuzzFeed to read an article for them. So there's a psychology behind like what, whoever your target audience is, you have to test a lot of different things. But at the end, what it comes down to, like dissecting their psychology, you do yourself have to convince or know if this is the kind of mentality that draws you in. This is the kind of person that you would like to hang out with. Is your ideal client the kind of person who could also be your friend? That's like, I know it's a very different approach than a lot of other mentors take, but because since I started taking that approach, I make $20,000 to $40,000 a month since I started taking that approach.
That is so good. Hey, Elizabeth, let me ask you, what was the catalyst to make you turn off all the mentors you're listening to stop following people and just go your own way? What made you do that?
Their authoritarianism. That's what turned me off, that this is the formula, 100% follow it, and you'll see things will work.
So did you try those things and they didn't work, or you just didn't like the idea of following someone else's formula?
Every time I tried a single mentor, 100%, it failed massively. But what I did was I took 10% of stuff that worked from every mentor, every class, everything that I've ever taken. The 10% stuff, nothing more than 10% ever worked for me, for anybody I've mentored with. So I took that 10%, applied that 10% from different avenues, and made my own model. I'm like, okay, this is where I'm comfortable at. This thing from this person worked. This thing this person suggested worked. This worked. Everything else, I'm like, okay, that's all noise. Like, I don't want my photos to look like Sue Bryce photos. I want my photos to be my signature photos.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? I don't want my photos to look like Tara Lesher's photos. I want them to be my signature thing. I want to see me in that photo. And that's where I did all of this stuff. And a lot of the work that I initially did last year was more oriented with, oh, this thing is making these people money, it should also make me money. And that was the worst approach to take. When I started doing, this is the stuff that I'm comfortable with. This is the stuff that I love doing. This is the stuff I would want to experiment with. And when I advertised only that, that's when people started seeing me. They were not seeing me when I was being like everybody else, because why would they? There is already somebody like that out there who everybody knows about, who is going to show up on search engines, whose photos are unremarkable. They look the same. Like, imagine if Michelangelo was giving a painting class and then all of his students were like, we want to paint Michelangelo. And then every painting in the world, we're like, oh, I want to go and buy a painting, was like Michelangelo, a Picasso would not have existed, right? Because Picasso is like his own thing. So I wanted to be that person that, okay, you all can like, you know, it's great to try to copy other artists to learn the skill set, but what you do with that skill set is something that has to be your own unique formula. At least that's what worked for me. I know a lot of people have success with copying other things, but they may also be the people who are not in it for art, but they're very good business people. I know a lot of like really subpar photographers who are making more than I am because they have cracked the formula for business.
It sounds like you're on the way to do both.
Yes. So that's the thing, right? So for me, it was very, very important to set the level, set the bar really, really high so that my clients can also see that this is something that is out of this world. This is something that I cannot get anywhere else. And this is something that doesn't look like, you know, 1998 Photoshop, like, you know, just clarity down, blur the thing, blow everything up, bright, 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 and you're done. Like, you know, that's not what it is.
I can see you've developed and you have your own style, which is a credit to you. I love it. And you obviously have your own voice, which attracts other women. I mean, I can see that you have the formula all coming together. One thing that you said to me earlier that kind of surprised me, I'm interested to hear your take on this. You told me that your booking rate is 20% for an inquiry. Do you see that as a high number or a low number?
This is a very high number.
Okay. So why do you see that as a high number? Tell me.
Why do I say that's a high number? Okay. So if I get 10 inquiries and like I book two sessions from every 10 inquiries, right? And if I get like, I get 60 to 100 inquiries a month. So that's like about, even on the lower end, about 12 to 20 shoots, right? And my average is going up. So even if I put my average, let's say 2,900, and even let's take the lower end, 12 shoots, that's like 34,800.
Right. I love it. Okay. This is exactly what I wanted from you. So the secret here, so 20% on the surface sounds pretty low. If you throw out a number, 20%, especially a wedding photographer, for example, that sees a couple, you know, they have a 90% booking rate. Generally, when I meet a couple, 90% of the couples I meet, I book. So 20% sounds low. But the secret to your, well, I'm not going to say the secret, the reason you're so successful with a 20% booking inquiry is because you have such a large number of inquiries.
Yeah, I have a large number of inquiries and I also have a high average, right?
Yes. So that's really, I'm sure the listener is thinking, Andrew, you just stop Alishba and ask her how she's getting so many inquiries.
How am I getting so many inquiries? It is a combination of a lot of things, like I said initially, right? I rank number one on SEO for all of my keywords. Some keywords I'm ranking number one internationally.
Did you do that yourself or did you pay someone to do that?
Oh, no, I did myself. It all comes down to content and how many people want to read and how many people want to go to your website. I believe I get about 300 to 600 hits on a website every day.
Unreal. And then when I go to your website, the very first thing is a big pop-up.
Yeah.
It takes over the whole page. And it says, get your free dream shoot planner and learn what your boudoir shoot will look like. So I've got to enter my name. I've got to enter my email address and my phone number.
Yeah.
What happens if I don't put my phone number in?
We won't go through. I don't think so.
Okay.
So it shouldn't go through. If it goes through, then I have to go fix it.
Okay, yeah. So it's asking me for the phone. I'm doing this now. No. So that field is required.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And this is when now I'm automatically, now I'm into your funnel. I'm going to start receiving emails for 6 months.
Yes, for 6 months every day. In the first week, you'll receive a lot of contact from me. You'll receive contact through every possible way I can contact you. You'll go online anywhere. You see your text message. You see your missed calls. You see your voicemail. I'm there. I am there. Like, this is probably the hardest part of this business for me.
Why is that? The follow-up?
Yes, because it's incredibly time-consuming and it's not a skill you can very easily outsource, because I talked to you about connection. I can't teach connection to an assistant, you know, unless the person is coming from the same mindset as I am. They won't be able to talk to the other person as a therapist. Like, when I pick up the phone, I am a therapist in the first 5 minutes. They're telling me their deepest, darkest insecurities. Like, this morning I had a consultation and the woman immediately dived into telling me that she hasn't had sex with her husband in 2 years. They've got twins and she's hoping that this photo shoot would change that.
So what would have this lady sharing this information with you so quickly? Is it because she's read your previous content and knows about you and you've shared your inner self online?
So this is one of the biggest things I'm trying to figure out right now. This is my personal research project, that why are they so comfortable that the first time I talk to them and like, hey, how's it going? Okay, you want to do a boudoir shoot and all this stuff. And they're telling me, you know, they want to do the session and they want to do all of this stuff. I personally think the reason is that they are not contacting me the first time they go on my website. They're probably not contacting me immediately. I think they let it simmer. I think that's what's going on. But even those who immediately, like, you know, who just go on my website and enter their information, I've seen this pattern that they are very comfortable talking to me because of my about section. My face is there. They go to my Instagram and all of my stories are there. My clients holding their album is there. They go to my Facebook page and they see me sharing the stuff directly from my personal Facebook page. And then they land on my Facebook page, my friend's page where we're connected. And they see me there. They see me as a real person. They see, like, when I do live videos, I'm not like, you know, oh, look, this is the session going on, whatever. Like, I always comment on a deeper topic too, something that's going on. I would make a joke. I would make a political joke. I would make a feminist joke. I would do those things because it's coming naturally to me. Somebody told me, actually a lot of mentors have told me to not use my political voice. But around this time last year, I had a full 1 hour conversation with Anita and she was like, use your voice. And I was like, I'm just going to use my voice. I don't care. And when I got comfortable with that, I think that's what's bringing these people in. I think that's what's making them comfortable. The fact that I'm willing to talk to them, I'm excited about getting their business. I'm not like, oh, my work is so great, you should be coming to me, right? Like, I don't have that mentality. And I'll give you an example. Okay, CIBC is a very big bank here. It's an international bank. Everybody knows about CIBC. Now, another bank here is Royal Bank of Canada. And Royal Bank was the first bank I ever opened an account with when I came to Canada as a high school, boarding school student way back when. So when I finally resettled in Canada permanently, it was the first bank I went to. I didn't even think about going to any other bank and open my account there. Now, last fall, I was traveling through Vancouver Airport and there was this CIBC person there. And he was just like, oh, like, you know, what about, do you have an Air Miles collecting card or whatever? I was like, no, I don't. And I was like, shit, I actually needed one. So I signed up, he did great stuff, I got approved. I got the credit card right then and there. And a month later, my business took off. So when I got that credit card and I was like, okay, I need to open a new bank account for business only because now I reached the threshold and stuff that I need to start collecting taxes and do all of this and actually keep track of shit. And like, I was so bad. I didn't even know the exact number of revenue I made. And then I was surprised myself. I was like, when I saw my profit was 37 Canadian dollars in 1 month, that's after expenses, after everything. I was like, no, this is bullshit. This can't be right. Then I went back and I took a pencil and I like started like writing down stuff and I was like, holy shit. Right?
$1,000 a day plus. Amazing. Clear profit.
Yeah, so that was the profit. That was not even net, right?
That wasn't gross. That was net.
It
was
Yeah, that was net. So it was interesting how that happened. So then I was like, okay, I need to open a bank account. My first thought was let's contact CIBC because I want like my big ticket items, like my expenses are higher. So I want to collect air miles. So I'm going to call them. I'm going to open a bank account with them. I called them once, twice, three times, set an appointment on their calendar, on the website and stuff. I had to reschedule an appointment, call their line again. I had a couple of questions for them. A couple of times they picked up my phone call. And then they said they're going to call me back with the answers. No callbacks. I missed one appointment. No follow-up. Left a voicemail to change an appointment. No follow-up. No follow-up over emails, nothing. I chased them for 3 weeks. And then I was like, what the hell? I'm just going to go to RBC because I need to do this now, now, now. Went to RBC, called them, set up the appointment. They were like, okay, yeah, come in tomorrow. I was assigned a personal banker right then and there. Then she signed me up for the business account. And then she signed me up for, I was like, hey, I have this Aventura card. I want more Air Miles stuff with you. I want a business card and I want this card. She gave me a very high approval for credit cards and stuff. Got that done. And then she told me, hey, do you have your child's education account? Open that, open this, this, this. She got so much stuff out of it because everything was done so streamlined. And she was constantly in contact with me. Then I was like, hey, I'm buying a bigger house, so I need mortgage approval and all that stuff. Put me in contact with her mortgage broker. That person got in touch with me. Everything was done within 3 weeks. I had a business account. I had a mortgage broker. I had my child's education fund secured. I had a credit card. Everything was done so quickly. The follow-up was beautiful. And I'm switching my entire family over to this bank for everything from all the biggest banks that they're all associated with. They're moving from that to RBC.
So you're doing the same thing in your business, I imagine.
So it's exactly, I am, because you know what? What CIBC did, they don't know that if I'm going to be their next, you know, $1 trillion account. Hope so. I don't think I will be. But when Apple started in the garage, Steve Jobs didn't know that, you know, it's going to hit being the first $1 trillion American company, right?
Yeah. So, no, I do. I get your point.
Right? So what I do now is every single inquiry I get, I treat it as this inquiry is going to bring me $20,000 worth of business. Every single person who calls, contacts me in any way, shape, or form, I treat them as like, this person is going to buy my biggest collection and then some and going to send me 50 people. So when I start doing that, I kid you not, my lowest collection, I sell it as much as my biggest collection, which is like once or twice a month, which is still pretty great considering the ticket price for my biggest collection is like almost 5,000. I still sell that once or twice a month. And my lowest is about $1,000. And I sell that once or twice a month. Everybody else is buying $3,000 plus from me.
Fantastic.
And I just booked a family shoot for later on in the summer where the session fee alone, I charge $900. That's just the session fee. Does not include photos. And I know I'm going to get about $12,000 to $15,000 worth of business from that family. So that is my thing. And I don't want to be CIBC. I want to be Royal Bank, right? So that's what I want to be. I'm not going to just give up on the person who has expressed interest, seen the value of what I have to offer, because they are the easy client, because I don't have to demonstrate to them what this is worth. So I will keep reaching. I'm not going to give up on them, even if they don't book me immediately. I've had people who come back to me, book me 6 months down the road. My friends who have been following my work for like the last 5 years, just last month, I booked 3 of my friends. 100% of my friends' photo shoots that I've done in the last 6 months, they've all paid me, have not once asked for a discount. Not once asked for a free photo shoot. Nobody ever asked me for free photo shoots. All the models who are like, you know, TFP for exposure, blah, blah, blah. Nobody approaches me for TFP. All of these models, all of these designers, they're like, hey, what is your pricing? That's the first thing they ask me because they don't.
Why do you think that is? Why? How do they know you don't work for, how do they know you won't do a TFP?
Because they see how busy I am. They see me live on Facebook, Instagram, all the time. If they land on my website once, they're going to see my ad 75 times throughout the year.
Right. Okay.
I'm not going to let them go. They're going to see me in their inbox. They're going to see me voicemail, text, everything. And the luxury standard of the photos, right? Like, for example, right now there's this craze going on that every boudoir photographer, right, left, and center, is ordering those Victoria's Secret style angel wings, right?
Right.
And a lot of photographers are making the mistake that this is maybe the missing piece they need for people to come to them.
Right.
And I'm like, no, because you can invest $3,000 in a pair of ostrich feather wings. But if that is the only thing that you have going on, you're still not going to attract the right person, right? So for me, that was just like, hey, I'm reinvesting in your experience, right? So when I'm taking them to Santorini, I'm like, I'm offering you an experience that you're not going to have on your own. Because anybody can rent wings. Anybody can do all of this stuff. You can make your own wings. But what you can't give is the quality of images. What you can't give is the polished final product. What you can't give is self-worth. It has to come from, like, not everybody can give it to them. The wings are not the things that are giving them all of this stuff.
No, of course not. No, that's obvious. Talking to you, that's so obvious. I mean, that's not why the women are coming to you for a shoot.
Right. And before I had wings, my average was that.
Yeah.
And because my average was that, I was able to invest in the wings. It didn't go the other way around.
Of course not. No, of course not. Elizabeth, I want to get a short answer to this question because I want to dive into advertising just quickly because I know I'm worried about your time. Have you still got time?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, I have about 5 more minutes.
Is that all? Get out. Okay, we're going to have to do a second interview.
It's just my baby screaming.
Okay.
I have a little baby.
Do you want to go and tend to your baby first?
Oh, my husband is there right now. Like, he's dealing with her right now. So my husband is also, he's an author. He's written a book called The Atheist Muslim. So he's also active in all of this stuff. So he does his own podcast as well. It's called Secular Jihadist.
Well, you know what? Let me ask you.
You're like, who are these people? So he is about to go on his podcast right after I'm done.
Okay. Well, how about, let me make a deal with you. I'll ask you 2 questions and you can answer them as quickly as you want to. And then let's schedule a follow-up so we can dive into some tactics.
Yes.
Okay. Sure. 2 questions. You don't give out prices on your website. You state that they start at $3.99, I think I saw. When do you discuss pricing when you make contact with a client? When does pricing come up from you? When do they get your real prices?
They get it right on the spot, like during the course of the conversation. They'll get the pricing of, like, you know, like my starting pricing and this and that. Very, very few people would insist on, okay, what is this particular thing? What is this particular thing? Like, they're very few people. I don't believe in overload of information and numbers because that is the only thing they'll hold on to otherwise. And I don't want number to be a holding factor.
Do you mention then average $3,000 or $3,500 in that conversation? Like, when do the women know roughly what they're going to be up for?
When they're in my sales room.
So really,
when they see the photos and they can't walk out with just one photo and they're like, there's no way I can narrow it down for less than 30. That's when.
Right. Okay, then. I love that. That's a great answer. But at some stage, they must have seen that they could possibly or potentially spend $5,000 with you. When do they know that or see that?
They don't see the number.
Never.
I'm being honest with you. They don't.
Wow.
I don't send them my price list. I talk to them about what they're going to get from the experience. I talk to them what it starts at. I talk to them, be like, you know, what do you want to invest? What is your investment? I'm like, very few people ask me very specific questions. Very, very few people. And even half of them like end up booking anyway because they see the value of everything. And I explain everything in detail. I don't just be like, package number 1, 5 for $1,200. Package number 2. Like, they're not interested in that. This is not what they're calling you for. They are calling you for, like, it's your responsibility to educate them. It's not their responsibility to know what photography industry is, right? So I need to explain it to them. I need to create the vision in their brains, in their minds, of what it's going to look like when they walk into the studio. And when they sit down, like, a lot of the times they'll have a price shock considering how many images they've selected. Despite the price shock, like, some women are like hyperventilating. They're like, ooh, okay, I'm going to have to put money from my savings account and this and this and this. And they're talking out loud to me. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm like, just shut up. And I'm like, how would you like to pay? That's all I do. How would you like to pay? I'm not going to be like, oh, you're taking out money from your savings account. Okay, how about I give it to you like for like, you know, half the price? Like, no. If you're going to walk into a Louis Vuitton store, you can't expect, like, you know, you want the handbag if it's like, you know, $5,000. And I'm like, oh shit, I have to like get it out from my savings account. Like, the salesperson's not going to turn around and be like, okay, let me give it to you for a grand. Like, no, I treat my products no less than a Louis Vuitton bag. So if they have to take out money from their savings account, good, because you value me enough that you feel like this is something so necessary that you have to dive into your backup savings.
I love it. I love it. You are amazing, Liz. But let me ask you this one last question, because I know now I've got you for round 2, where we're going to dive into Facebook ads, Instagram, blogs, and your pipeline. But let me finish off with asking you about the personal side of things, and how outspoken and how strong your position is on all these women's rights and things that you've been talking about. Do you live in fear? Like, are you worried about your life?
So that was one of the biggest things why I did not have a Google listing for the longest time, because I do have active death threats against me. I had to go to Toronto police a few years ago because Taliban targeted me and they started like doxing me, like putting on my, you know, stuff everywhere. I have family that still lives back home. So I had to get like protection from them. I had to get the Canadian intelligence involved, be like, hey, can you just scope out and see if there's any threat that's actually against me in the country and stuff like that. So I had to go to them for assistance. I haven't been back to Pakistan since 2011. And I didn't see my family for like about 6.5 years because I couldn't go back because they had fatwas against me. So fatwas is basically, you know, in Islamic theology, a person who is subjected to fatwa is basically capital punishment. So shoot at sight, basically. So if I were to go to Pakistan, either the government itself, because Pakistani government is actually cracking down on anybody who has liberal views. So they go through your Facebook messages and stuff like that. My friends have been arrested. My friends have been killed. Jeez. I've actually lost my friends to absolute nonsensical violence, either captured, kidnapped, and tortured by state or by mob. Like one of my closest friends died not very long ago. Just a guy just shot her in the head. She was 40 years old, running a space that was basically a coffee shop for anybody, all the youth, to come over and have any conversation without fear of prosecution, fear of somebody, you know, reporting them, or just a space where people can hang out and talk about things and discuss ideas, do theater plays and stuff like that. And then she was just randomly killed. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine is also Raif Badawi. He is the guy who is currently in jail in Saudi Arabia for being the author of a blog called Saudi Liberals. So they just threw him in jail for 10 years, 1,000 lashes. Public lashing was his punishment. 1 million Saudi rial was his another fine that he had to pay, travel ban, this and that. He has 3 kids and a wife who are now in Canada. They're my family friends, these guys. And then he's in jail for doing what I do every day. And he hasn't seen his kids in 6 years. The kids are growing up without their father being in their lives. And he's just sitting in jail. Then Saudi Arabia goes to arrest his lawyer, who's also his brother-in-law, because he's defending him for representing the client's view. So Saudi Arabia imprisons him. And then his sister is also in jail for talking about women's rights. So these are my friends. This is like first degree connections. I have lost friends in, you know, if you people who are up to date with current affairs. In Bangladesh, there is a serious threat against atheists, and then mob just comes over and kills you, chops you up, literally chops you up. Personally, know people who have been killed like that. Personally, know survivors of that. So this is my circle. These are the people I talk to. I have spoken to people in secret phone conversations who can't talk about what happened to them in state prison because they're not in the country, but they're still being spied on. So it is not an easy thing to do, to talk about, like, basically what the Islamic community is going through right now is what Christianity went through during Enlightenment. You can say in a way that Muslims are going through an Enlightenment phase right now. That's why there's so much like Spanish Inquisition style hostility. But somebody has to talk about these things, right? And somebody has to bring these things forward. So yes, it is not an easy thing to do. It's a risk. It is a threat to life. Like we can't go to any Muslim country. I can't go back home without actively, you know, putting ourselves in danger. But this stuff is so very important. This work is so very important to do in order to make sure that nobody else goes through that. And because I'm in a privileged position, that it's very unlikely that something will happen to me in Canada or in a developed country. It's very unlikely there will be an attack against me. That it is kind of like our duty. And one of the biggest reasons why it's unlikely is because we were one of the few people who started this debate, started this conversation globally. So now so many people are out there talking about these things that the kind of risk has spread out. And the Muslim society in general is becoming a little bit more tolerant towards the idea that, whoa, people can actually not believe in Islam, even though they were raised in Islamic communities. Okay, we can kind of sort of deal with this. You know, women can take their hijabs off. Okay, we can kind of sort of deal with it instead of like kill them.
Right.
So in order to like push them towards moderate views, the exposure, like it's kind of like, you know, draw Muhammad Day. A lot of people have different opinions about it, whatever. But I'm like, you know, now it's happening so much that what happened to Salman Rushdie is not going to happen to just any random person, because there's so many cartoonists out there who are going to draw offensive things. And how many people are you going to hunt down? So my point is that if writing, drawing anything offensive is leaving you exposed to physical threat, then there is more of a need to do that until such time that it's moot. Like, for example, if I draw a cartoon of Jesus, nothing is going to happen to me. So I'm like, whatever about it. But if I draw a cartoon of Muhammad, okay, very interesting things are going to happen to me.
Absolutely, yes.
So that's why, like, you know, freedom of speech is very important. It's very closely tied to women's rights too. In my country, women are killed things a lot less than just taking their clothes off, a lot less than that. So it's very, very important that we talk about these things, especially in a climate where Trump is president of the most powerful country in the world. And he talked about women the way he talked about women. Even in this society, it's very, very important to talk about these issues. And especially if you're in a privileged position, it's kind of like your responsibility to do it. So short answer, yes, my life is in danger, but not immediately in danger at this point.
So you manage it. You manage it as best you can.
Yes, yes.
Elispa, you have been amazing. I'm definitely going to chase you up for round two. Let's do that on Facebook Messenger so you can look after your child. Your husband can do his podcast. Yeah. I haven't mentioned your website, which is dreamboudoirphotography.com. I'll add links to that in the show notes, but we'll record part two as soon as you're available to do that. You have been amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you've been, like, you know, one of the most amazing people from the first day I started following you. And you're such a positive, open-minded person that it's so comfortable talking to you about anything. And I think, like, a lot of that I kind of incorporated in my business too. I think the way I talk to my clients is the way you have always spoken to me. So that was also a great source of inspiration. You know what I was talking about, like taking 10% of what works from everywhere. That was my inspiration. Like, you were my inspiration. We're like, okay, I want to be able to connect to people the way this guy is connecting to everybody. So that was the thing.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for always being so amazing.
Oh, thank you, Elispa. We'll talk more in a day or two or whenever you're available. And we can even talk about sex toys in that one.
I'll read out my wisdom, newly acquired wisdom.
Fantastic. Thanks, Elispa. Thank you.
For sure. For sure. Thank you, Andrew.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Elispa as much as I did in conducting it. Elispa, if you're listening, I've already told you, you are amazing. You're fantastic. I love everything that you had to share. And I want to say big thanks for agreeing to do part two of this interview for next week. So that's just fantastic. I'm looking forward to sharing all the details about your marketing, advertising, Facebook ads, all the different things you do with email, phone calls, sales, in next week's episode. So again, a massive thanks to you. For you, the listener, I really do hope you got as much from Elispa and that part one of the interview that I've shared with you today. If you do have a follow-up question for Elispa following today's episode, head over to the comments area in the show notes and you can find them at photobizx.com/310. So photobizx.com/310. The comments area is at the very bottom of the show notes. In those show notes, like I mentioned at the end of the interview there, I've got links to anything and everything that Elispa mentioned. I've also got examples of her beautiful work. It's all there in the show notes. And if you are a premium member, you will probably already know that Elispa is a premium member. She's there available to you inside the members Facebook group. She's already actively contributing inside the group. If you have any other questions, comments, if you just want to say thanks for coming on and sharing what you did, you can do that inside the members Facebook group. And again, part two of that interview is coming up next week. It's not an extension of today's interview at all. We actually had to stop that interview. Elizabeth had to go and look after her little child. Her husband had to record a podcast. It was all happening. We went way over time. So we actually set up and recorded a second interview, which I'll be bringing to you next week. And I can promise the focus of that interview is on tactics and strategy on building a business and exactly what Elizabeth has done to build her boudoir photography business the way she has.
It's shout out time.
I've got two big shout outs for today's episode. And the first one goes to Katarina and Damien of Truly Madly Deeply in the USA. And I love what they say in their iTunes review. They say, "We enter into photography businesses full of hope, excitement, and passion for our art. Then inevitably, we get bogged down by the daily challenges of running a small business and a relentless to-do list. It can be frustrating, it can be overwhelming, and at times it can be a little demoralizing." They go on to say, "PhotoBizX is the antidote." I love that. And then they go on to say some other nice things about the guests that you hear on the PhotoBizX podcast and how inspired and invigorated both Katarina and Damien are after each episode, which is just fantastic. So thank you so much, guys, for taking the time to leave that 5-star rating and that lovely review in iTunes. It really does mean a lot to me, and it's so good to have you part of it all. So thank you so much. The second big shout out goes to Ian Irwin. He is an Irish-based wedding and elopement photographer, and he says in his iTunes review that PhotoBizX is the most informative photography business podcast he has ever found. He stumbled across it 4 months ago, and it changed everything in his business. I love this paragraph where he says, "Being frank, I've made money in ways I didn't even think I could, thanks to Andrew's straight-to-the-point questioning and clear desire to help his listeners. The small investment to become a premium listener is more than worth it when I look at the money I've made in return recently." That is so good. I love that. Ian goes on to say some other fantastic things about the podcast, how it's helped his business. And yeah, it's just awesome. That's exactly why I do the podcast. So it's so rewarding for me to read reviews like this one. So Ian, Katarina and Damien, thank you again so much for leaving your ratings and reviews in iTunes. I've added a copy of your reviews into the show notes for today's episode, and I've also added a link to your websites using the keyword phrases that you're looking to rank for as a little way for me to say thanks for taking the time to leave those reviews that you did. So if you are listening to the podcast and you are looking to boost your SEO, if you're looking for a backlink from the PhotoBizX website using the keyword phrase that you're looking to rank for, simply hop over into iTunes or Stitcher, leave an honest rating and a review for the PhotoBizX podcast or the Photography Experiment podcast. Let me know that you've done that. Let me know the keyword phrase that you're looking to rank for and the URL that you'd like me to link to, and I'll happily do exactly the same for you from a future episode of the podcast. Well, from the show notes of a future episode of the podcast. Again, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to leave your ratings and reviews.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
If you are enrolled in the Evergreen Facebook Ads for Photographers course, we'll have the fourth and final installment of the live training this Wednesday. I'll be messaging you details about that inside the group and also via email so you don't miss that one. If you miss that course and you would like to hear the recordings and get involved and build a Facebook ad funnel, an evergreen Facebook ad funnel for your photography business, shoot me an email. I can get you access to that course for $97. It includes three live sessions, but are recorded sessions, plus a bonus Q&A session. You'll get access to the Facebook group for all the course participants, plus you will get access, free access to any future iterations of this course. So whether I deliver this as a live course again in the future at a higher price, or if it becomes a standalone course, which I expect it will be, you will have access to both and all those as they develop and grow. So if it's something that you missed out on that you really wish you could have enrolled and participated in, shoot me an email. It's andrew@photobizx.com. I can send you an invoice for $97. I'll get you access to all the course materials including the recordings, the live recordings, the bonus recordings, the how-to tips. It's all there for you. Access to the course participants group, and you can start building your own evergreen Facebook ad funnels based on exactly what we cover in the course. And again, if you are part of the original course membership, we'll be running that final installment of the live session this Wednesday, Australian Eastern Time, which may be your Tuesday, depending on where you live in the world. But keep an eye inside the Facebook group and on your email for full details on that one. Alrighty, that really is it for me for this episode of the podcast. I hope you have an amazing week. I'm looking forward to chatting to you next week when I bring you part two of the interview with Alishba Zahr, and we dive into the marketing details of her fantastic boudoir photography business. All right, have a great week. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.